This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And it's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. And moving along, I guess, you know, early on, just on MSP, we were talking about stopping the tech rot, and, you know, we were talking about how, you know, there may be a possibility that our...
I just got you to say tech rot again, and it was complete... See, it's already catching on.
Anyways, in 2017, Facebook, they announced that it wanted to create a headband that would allow people to type at the speed of 100 words per minute just by thinking. Now, a little over 2 years later, the social media giant is revealing that it's been financing extensive university research on human volunteers. And this breakthrough is the first to demonstrate how the intention to say specific words can be extracted from brain activity and then converted into text rapidly enough to keep pace with just natural conversation. And in its current form, the brain reading software only works for certain sentences that has been trained. But the scientists do believe that it's actually a stepping stone towards a more powerful system that can decode in real time a person intends to say, a word that a person intends to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, at the moment, the technology still sounds very simplistic, but to give listeners an idea of the kind of speed that this is moving at, we talked, I think it was towards the end of last year, it was a university experiment where three people had been linked together to play a game of Tetris, and it actually needed the brainwaves of all three people to do the different combinations of moves. And in the space of a few months, we've gone from that, three people playing a game of Tetris, to Neuralink being potentially on the shelves by 2020.
That was last week.
Yeah, exactly. And Facebook's research where they can, you know, they might be short of the 100 words a minute, but they're starting to see real results in terms of how this technology is working in real-world situations.
Yeah, so the doctors at the University of California in San Francisco, they took on the challenge in hopes of creating this product that would allow paralyzed people to communicate more fluidly than using existing devices that basically picks up eye movements or muscle twitches to control a virtual keyboard. And this work is funded by Facebook and is led by Edward Chang, who's a neurosurgeon, and he's the lead researcher on this study that was published in the journal Nature. And it was possible thanks to three epilepsy patients who were about to have neurosurgery for their conditions. And before the operations went ahead, they basically, you know, had a small patch of tiny electrodes placed directly into their brains for at least a week to map out the origins of their seizures. And during their stay in the hospital, the patients, all of them who could speak normally, agreed to take part in this research. And he used the electrodes to record brain activity while each patient was asked nine set of questions and asked to read a list of 24 potential responses. And they had about an accuracy of about 76 to 61%. And that's, you know, that's really impressive for like the first trial of something like this, because we know how complex the brain is, and it's taken us, you know, you talked about in the space of few months we've, you know, leapfrogged, but EEG and all these technologies have been around for so long, but it's, you know, it's finally we're like, we feel we're that much closer to understanding how the brain works.
Well, also, I mean, you know, we know that Facebook said that 100 words per minute was its goal. But even with these more modest results, you could still do things that are very effective. I think you're probably going to get into the VR world in the short term. But one of the problems we have with virtual reality is how to actually control the devices. We can use voice technology, but it makes a lot more sense to use brain processing power. And we're also, you know, on the verge of a lot of these kind of screenless technology and screenless devices as well. So you don't necessarily need to have a vocabulary of thousands and thousands of words.
Yeah.
Simple terms like stop, repeat, enter. As long as the machine can actually read those commands, you can work these computer interfaces that are connecting you to other services or this kind of world of virtual reality.
Mm. I don't want to talk about the virtual reality because I guess we kind of understand it. It's, you know, you wear the VR glasses of the future, and you know, while you're, let's say you're working out, you're on a treadmill, and you just think of play the next song, or you know, play me the Black Keys, and you know, in just thinking of it allows you to, you know, it leads to play. So it's as simple as that. But I guess the, you know, the question that we always ask on this show is just that, like, you know, there needs to be some ethics around this, right? Because that is that risk.
The what?
Because it is funded by Facebook, and you know, despite Facebook saying that, you know, oh, this is actually, you know, all the data will be stored in the university and stuff, they did say though that Facebook employees are actually able to go there and study the data. So, you know, there and we're so new into this space that there really needs to be a conversation about the ethics. Because, you know, your earlier MSP was literally just all about the worries that this will cause.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the good things about this, I think, is, as you were saying, on MSP, we were talking about the way that the media has kind of changed the way that it covers this kind of technology. Now, one of the kind of new professions we're seeing are areas like neuroethicists. So we are seeing people coming into these fields and having the idea, at least, for these codes of conduct. There are people doing work in this area. But like you said, we have to be very careful where the funding for these studies comes from. And as you said, what kind of access the company has to people. Because if we go back to the last US presidential election, Facebook had embeds with the political candidates. Now, when we're talking about brain technology, you don't want to talk about embeds. You don't want embeds from a company being anywhere near your brain. And this is one of the areas that that we have to come to some resolution, whether that's through voluntary codes of conduct, which, as we know, basically don't work, or whether it's through lawmakers actually coming up with the frameworks and basing it on the works of people like neuroethicists.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll be right back with King of Culture after this, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Brand-friendly marketeers, BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pops Matt Armitage. What do we have for King of Culture?
Well, we have a podcast.
Of course.
Yes. This is a new podcast from Recode, the tech company. It's called Land of the Giants, and it's actually an investigative series into the big tech companies.
Nice.
So series one is all about Amazon. So they're looking at things like how the company came together, but they're also looking at the way the company's products were formed. So the first episode looks at Amazon Prime and how Amazon Prime came about and how it's become crucial to the success and growth of Amazon, and how once they've got you hooked into that Prime ecosystem, that's how they can then start to sort of pump content to you, pump retail items to you. And because of those benefits you receive, you're more likely to start spending more of your money with Amazon. So they grow their business exponentially. So it's a really interesting series. So they'll go on to Facebook and Twitter and all of that kind of stuff. But they're starting with Amazon. Like I said, first episode, I think the second one came out this week. I haven't listened to it yet, but it's really interesting, well worth subscribing to.
What's it called again?
It's called Land of the Giants.
Land of the Giants.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah. Also, just to follow up on podcast recommendation, a couple of weeks ago, you talked to me about a podcast about sand.
Now, I let you off that. I was going to bring that up the last couple of weeks, and I thought, no, I'm not going to be mean. Have you listened to it?
Yes. So I have listened to it over the weekend. And you are right. It's absolutely fascinating how we've taken something that's so small and just forgot about it, and how important it is to society.
Absolutely. And what the listeners can't see is is the silly grin that's on your face, which is the same as the silly grin that I had on my face when I was saying that it's one of the most fascinating shows I've ever listened to.
And it's the silly grin that the author told that, you know, when he presented that, you know, to a couple of individuals that he's going to be doing a story about sand.
Yeah.
And that was the same expression that everyone was giving him.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Are you for real?
Are you for real? But then you listen to it and it is astonishing. So that's it's 99% invisible,
99%
right? It's the story
invisible.
The story of sand or the story of concrete.
Yeah,
I think
it's just sand. Yeah, just go
you,
up.
You
look
have
it up.
To listen to it. It's podcast of the year so far.
Good on you. Anyways, let's talk about. Well, earlier on, before the break, you know, we talked about there must have some ethics around, you know, the use cases of you know, brain waves and using it for, you know, purposes, whether it's for medical reasons or to enhance your superhuman capabilities, like Neuralink is doing. On the same note, at least, the World Health Organization have recently came out and said no more gene-edited babies. So basically, no to CRISPR, because, you know, 8 months ago or so, right, there was the Chinese scientist who revealed he had created the world's first gene-edited baby. And now the World Health Organization is asking countries to put a stop to any experiments that would lead to birth of more gene-edited humans. And the Director General put out a statement earlier urging that regulatory authorities in all countries should not allow any further work in this area until its implications have been properly considered. So at least it's a step forward to, you know, no to CRISPR and gene editing babies.
I'm actually a little bit upset about this because I have been doing gene editing for babies out of my car porch in Putrajaya. So, you know, anyone who drives past, I've got a little sign up. No, it is an area that needs regulation, but the thing is, it's very hard to control because when we look at most technologies that we control, whether it's radioactive materials, weapons technology, it's usually quite easy to restrict the components. But CRISPR and gene editing uses readily available chemical precursors. You know, you can do it for 10 or 20 or 30 US dollars. It's very, very cheap to do. And that means it's very hard to regulate. And one of the problems with saying no to all of this, yes, it's taking the ethics into account, but it pushes it underground. And something that is as easy to do as this, I think there still needs to be some kind of oversight.
Yeah, because, you know, WHO, they really can't do anything when, you know, it's not like a law per se.
They can't enforce the law. I mean, they can restrict access to funding and that kind of thing, but we're seeing a lot of pressure coming out of countries like Russia, for example, and China. Not necessarily to do anything wrong. I think one of the Russian companies is putting something together that would stop hereditary deafness.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not talking about giving people Popeye muscles and, you know, kind of
Captain
ridiculous
America strength.
Yeah. You know, we're not looking at sort of radically altering people, but I think we have to find a balance. Yeah.
Anyways, you know how sometimes some people say you really look, you know, perfect for the job. That's what kind of what happened to a gentleman by the name of Jordan Guthman. He's the VP of Technology at Edelman, and he interviewed for a job at Amazon a few years ago. And, you know, he had his picture taken while he was there. And unfortunately, or fortunately, he didn't get the job there, which is kind of funny because recently he just realized that Amazon was actually using a photo of him on their talent acquisition website. And he actually posted it on Twitter and, you know, everyone started make fun about, you know, like, hey, you know, maybe you just look so good for the job, but you don't have the job.
Well, no, I mean, maybe it goes to not everyone who looks like they're right for the job is actually right for the job. But what I loved about this story was actually the reaction of the guy to his photo being used, because he said, you know, people were coming to him and saying, did you sign a model release form? Do you want to sue Amazon? And he's just taken it in a very funny way. He's just you know, yeah. No, you know, I've notified them. They've taken it down. I think it's funny. You know, they're telling me I'm exactly the type of person they want to hire, but they turned me down. It's just silly and funny.
Yeah, it is a silly photo. But you know what? There were some questions, like you mentioned early on, that was raised. And, you know, you never know what you sign when you go for a job interview, especially for a company like Amazon and, you know, all the big tech companies, the giants of the world. It doesn't have to be tech. You generally sign, you know, some sort of, you know, disclosure.
And yeah, you know, something that's very thick with a lot more points in it than you can actually get through.
And, you know, if they've taken a photo of you, they may use it for different reasons. But you're right. You know, he took it very kindly and he was saying, like, it's weird that, you know, I seem to fit the bill to be an Amazon talent.
Well,
but
yeah, I've got the image, but obviously I didn't have the personality, right? Yeah.
And before we go on for GeekTunes, we have your TM1 Tech Minute. In today's world, dozens, if not hundreds, of companies are involved in the hub and spoke systems that provide our on-demand transport, retail, and services. Making those services work requires integration on an almost unimaginable scale. Innovative solutions that allow drivers to check the availability of parking spaces and reserve them in advance. Rideshare services that integrate with real-time public transportation and flight schedules to maximize efficiency and drive down the cost to consumers. Drones and robots that can deliver food and perishables to your desk within the hour. TM1 plays a key role in providing cloud services that can scale on demand for a more cost-effective and seamless cloud experience, with uncompromised security and data sovereignty. A hyper-connected ecosystem made possible by TM1. And that was your TM1 Tech Minute. Matt, what do we have for GeekTunes?
We have a cover of a song by an old psychedelic band called the 13th Floor Elevators. This is a track called You're Gonna Miss Me, and it's by The Ghost of a Saber-Toothed Tiger, which is actually the current band of Sean Lennon, one of John Lennon's sons.
Oh, right.
Okay. So yeah, this is You're Gonna Miss Me by The Ghost.
BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.